So I figured what we'll do is just do the Haggadah from the beginning, try to move so that we can hopefully cover before we get to Pesach, we actually cover the Haggadah. Okay, so starting with, even the Haggadah really begins with the declaration of destroying all the chometz in our possession. That's included in the beginning of the Haggadah. And the truth is, it really ties into the Haggadah. The Gemara in the Yerushalmi says that someone that eats matzah before the Leila Seder, the Yerushalmi is talking about the day before, on the 14th of Nisan, is like someone who is boil arusoso with base chamov. He acts as a husband towards his fiancée in his father-in-law's house. In other words, he jumps the gun. He's jumping the gun. And that's obviously a negative thing, and one should not eat matzah the day before Pesach, the Erev Pesach. One should not eat matzah. The Maharal elaborates a little bit and explains that the concept of an arusa, of an engaged girl, is an interesting state where she is on the one hand already forbidden to other people, but on the other hand she is not yet a nusua, she is not yet taken to the husband. And that's really the situation that we find ourselves in as well on Erev Pesach. On the one hand, we already cannot eat chametz, which means the matzah is special to us already. It's somehow designated for us that we are people who we can't eat chametz anymore. On the other hand, we're not yet ready to begin eating the chametz. The matzah. Yeah. So that's the analogy. I want to take it a step further and maybe propose a deeper understanding. What is the concept at all of having an arusa before her becoming a nesua? She becomes engaged and forbidden to the whole world, and then a time goes by. We just read in Megillas Esther as well that before the ladies would go to Ahasuerus, they would spend 6 months in preparation. A person could say a very practical thing. You propose to a girl, take some time afterwards to plan the wedding, things like that. So you need a little bit of a delay. But we see, first of all, I don't know if they used to have so much preparations that we have nowadays. And in times of the Gemara, it used to be a year, not in times of the Gemara, in times of the Chumash actually, with Parshas Chayesara, with Eliezer and getting Rivka, Rashi there brings that the normal amount of time for a girl to wait was an entire year. That's a serious amount of time. And the concept is, there's a preparation that has to take place where, in the case of the girl, that she is thinking about her chasson, she's preparing for herself for him, and that really cannot take place until she's, you could say, maybe when they're dating, maybe when they just first met, she could already begin. As long as he hasn't given her the ring, as long as she's not an arusa to him, then her heart is not yet open. She's not yet capable of emotionally integrating and dealing with and really coming to terms with the fact that she's giving herself over to him. And that analogy carries over perfectly into the situation with matzah. We destroy the chametz Erev Pesach, and then, and only then, can we start thinking. We'll talk about obviously what these things mean. Let's just right now throw out the terms. Chametz representing shibud, enslavement, and then matzah representing geula, salvation. So, if we think about the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, when you're a slave and you've got and you're being beaten and you're being pressured and it's so difficult and so all-encompassing, a person can't even think about anything. You can't be thinking yet about becoming an Eved Hashem, right? So to become an Eved Hashem takes a certain amount of mental preparation to go out to freedom. What freedom to serve? Freedom from shibud in order to be able to serve. So just like Klal Yisrael Mitzrayim, actually, from the time that the Makos began, from the time that the plagues began, the shibud stopped. We were no longer working. We were no longer being pressed. We were able to think. We were able to breathe and analyze and weigh things up. So too, only after we remove the chametz, which we're going to see is the Seor Shebe'isa, is the code word that Chazal used, the Gemara Brachas uses the word Seor Shebe'isa, the sourdough, the sourness in the dough, as the code word for the Yetzer Hara. Then we can start to contemplate what it means. What do I want to do? Where do I want to go? Why do I want to be free? What for? So if you jump to eating matzah right away, before you've had this waiting period where you've already destroyed the chametz and you're not yet ready to eat the matzah, right? If you don't have that waiting period of building up and really coming to terms with what you want to do with the eating of this matzah, if you just jump to eating it right away, so that's kilu boil arisosu beis chametz. Okay. So there's, now we start setting up the Ka'ara plate, right? Our Seder plate.
You mentioned the wedding, the analogy to the wedding ceremony with the engagement. I'm just, is that, I learned recently that there was a part of the wedding that we do today, which is like there was one follows the other, whereas in ancient times there was a period of a year long.
You're right. Yeah. So
is that what you're referring to?
So you're right. Nowadays we do the Erison and the Nisuin back to back. The Erison is the giving of the ring, the Nisuin. It's either right away under the chuppah, or it's in the cheder yichud. That's out of fear and concern of maybe something will happen in the meantime. So we do things a bit differently out of safety considerations. But the way that the Torah describes it, that's the ideal way. So that's what's happening over here. Okay, good. All right, so we're setting up the Kara plate, the Seder plate, and on it we're going to have three main players. Those are the three mitzvahs. And besides that, we're going to have some remembrances as well, which we'll talk about as well, as a show. But the three main items on the Seder plate that are the mitzvah is the matzah, the maror, and what should be the Korban Pesach, now it'll just be a zecher for the Korban Pesach, So those three represent the three fundamental themes of Pesach. There is the maror, is of course because of the, like the pasuk says, "Sheyimoru es chayeim," they embittered our lives with the shibud, with the subjugation. So the maror represents that first stage. Then we have the Hashem punishing the Egyptians, breaking their hold over us and punishing them 10 makos for what they did. And that is represented by the Korban Pesach, of course. Pesach has to do with the makos b'choros. Hashem pasach over the Jewish houses. Either pasach means to jump over, or it means to have mercy on. Whatever it means, but that represents Makas Bechoros, which is the strongest part of the judgment that the Egyptians had for the servitude. And then finally is Matzah, is the Geula, like the Pasuk says, that you will eat Matzah. Since we left Bechipozun, we left in a hurry, there wasn't time for the dough to rise. That's why we have matzah. That's why we eat matzah now, because we left so quickly. That represents the leaving from Mitzrayim. Now notice, by the way, that these three weave together three basic attributes with which Hashem runs the world. Also three attributes with which we operate, which are the attribute of kindness, the attribute of strict justice or toughness, let's call it, and the attribute of mercy. So I already gave it away. Targum says Pesach, the word Pesach means mercy. We'll see why that is in a minute. But obviously the maror, the bitterness, the, you know, whoever's the tough guy, he likes, you know, the freshly ground horseradish for his maror, right? Right, so that's, which attribute is that, you think, Aaron? That's Gvura, very good. Exactly right. Yeah, I like to throw you some softballs. Yeah. Okay, so, and that, of course, is why the Jewish people were subjugated to harsh, crushing labor, like the Midrash says, that's like we were like in a crucible where gold is refined, right? Refining gold is a very important thing to do, but it's if gold had feelings, it wouldn't exactly be the most pleasant experience, right? It's very, very hot, tremendous pressure. And you're pulling all the impurities out. That's what's happening to the Jewish people. We're being ground by the strict justice, by the strict judgment, toughness, and that toughness was wringing out any impurities from us. So that's the moral. On the other hand, obviously, matzah is great. It's awesome. We're leaving, finally going out to freedom. We're you know, so excited. It's so nice, and that's, there's nobody getting hurt in that regard, right? So that's the attribute of chesed. On the other hand, the Karban Pesach represents somewhere in between. On the one that we're talking about, Makas Bechoros, we're talking about the killing of the Egyptian firstborn. Some of them were little children, right? That wouldn't go over very well on CNN, right? The Jewish people killed all these poor, look at this poor little boy, right? But Hashem decided, listen, he's killing the firstborn, that's all of them, right? So there is definitely an aspect of strict justice in that. The Egyptians got a big patch, right? On the other hand, of course, first of all, Hashem was being merciful towards us by saving us from that. And second of all, the whole thing is being done for us to break the Egyptian hold over us. So those are the three main attributes that are being displayed in these three mitzvahs. Now, there's an awesome thing that we can add to this. The Gemara and the Arvei Pesachim says that although all three are from the Torah, but the mitzvah to eat maror is inextricably tied up with eating the Korban Pesach. So much so that we paskin that bezman hazeh, since we don't have a Korban Pesach anymore, maror is no longer a mitzvah from the Torah either. The mitzvah of maror is only a mitzvah when we have a Korban Pesach. Now, of course, midrabbanan, the rabbis still instituted that we should continue eating maror, and simply said that that would just be a zecher, that would be a remembrance for the deraisa maror that we had. I think we'll see better than that. We'll see the depth of that. But unlike maror, matzah, although also tied up with the Korban Pesach together in the same pasuk, matzah has a separate pasuk from which we learn out a mitzvah deraisa to eat matzah, even if there is no Korban Pesach. Now that's a very interesting dynamic between those mitzvahs. Okay? So now we take that, we plug it into what we just explained earlier. The maror is the embitterment of our lives, the harsh decrees that Paro made against us, the suffering that the Jewish people had in Mitzrayim. Karm Pesach is Hashem punishing the Egyptians for what they did. And matzah is us being leading to freedom. Now, when we say a mitzvah midaraisa, well, what we should be thinking is, oh, I see Hashem's word in this. I see a revelation of godliness in this. Now, with matzah, salvation. Salvation, I see Hashem's hand in that. We went out to freedom. That's awesome. It's great. And that would be great even if there would not have been a judgment of the Egyptians. Even if there would not have been a punishment of the Egyptians. And a day of reckoning with them, still it's great to go out to freedom. That's a wonderful thing. However, maror, which represents the embitterment that they cause to our lives, it's a negative thing. When the goyim embitter our lives, when they afflict us so much, when they grind us, when they crush us like that, is that called seeing a manifestation of Hashem in the world? No, it's not. Very good. Right? So is there any way that we can imagine where the force of evil afflicting and making the Jewish people suffer can somehow be, yes, a manifestation of godliness in the world?
If it's then followed by mercy?
If it's followed by punishment. In other words, if whoever it is that went and did something against the Jewish people, against Hashem, against the Torah, right? And then that person or that entity is brought to judgment, is brought to reckoning, and is made to pay dearly for what they did, then on the contrary, then that actually shows that there's no such thing as violating or denying the will of Hashem, which is a greater manifestation, really, of the kingship of Hashem than if everything is nice. If everything is just nice and dandy, so okay, maybe everything is just very nice because there's nobody bad coming, right? So it's just nice. It's great. You know, let's all party. But when there is a force of evil, and then that force of evil is snapped like a dry twig and is shown to be so powerless against Hashem, then it's even a greater manifestation of Hashem's kingship. And
Rabbi, I'm sorry, I just had a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Leo.
There's no timeline for this retribution, correct?
There's no timeline for what? Sorry?
For this retribution, for this justice to be served. It could happen in a lifetime. It could take 200 years.
That's right. There's no timeline for it. And that's exactly the point. That as long as... So if you're in a situation where the retribution has not yet happened, then also the suffering is not yet a revelation of godliness either. Once the retribution comes in, once there's a revelation of that, then even the suffering is transformed to be a manifestation of the will of Hashem. Because the whole time he was watching, he was deciding, he was using it as a purifying force, whatever it is, but the whole time he was in charge, and afterwards he made it all play out correctly. So according to that, now we understand why when there's a Korban Pesach, which is a manifestation of divine retribution, then there's also mitzvah of Mar. When there's no Korban Pesach, there's no mitzvah of Mar. But either way, even though there's no Korban Pesach, there's still a mitzvah of matzah, because you still see a divine revelation in the salvation. And I just want to bring it home with an analogy. You go to a nice shawarma place in Eretz Yisrael, right? So now, okay, we think of matzah as being dry crackers. That's a extra stringency because the Jewish people are so excited about making sure that our matzah should be 100% clean of any chametz. But technically, matzah is a lafa, right? Matzah is just lafa is bread that hasn't risen. That's matzah. So you go, you buy yourself a lafa, right? Then what do you ask for, Morty? You want some roasted lamb in there, right? That's the Korban Pesach, right? And now that would be tasty. If you left that it is, that would already be very tasty. But what would make it even tastier? What are you gonna ask them to put in there? Some mar, something spicy, right? Because on the contrary, with the meat, with the roasted lamb, the mar actually adds to the flavor. It actually makes it tasty. Mar by itself is just bitter. But when combined, when put into the with the roasted lamb, with inside rolled up in the lafa, it's delicious. That's what we have to look forward to. Okay. Yeah, so now we move on to the Kaddish, right? So we got the Seder of the day, Kaddish, Urchatz, Karpas, etc. So Kaddish is Kiddush, making Kiddush. And the truth is that we are going to have four cups of wine throughout the day. So being that this is the first cup of the wine, so let's just talk about the four cups. Okay? So the Gaon says that the four cups represent four stages in the night, and that represents four stages in our existence. So what are the four stages of our existence? First stage is Olam Hazeh, our existence in this world, in this physical, imperfect, difficult world where we are put to work, to challenge. Second stage is Yamos HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach that we're waiting for so much, and they can taste the Mashiach right around the corner, right? And then stage three is Tchias HaMasim, the resurrection of the dead, and stage four is Olam Haba, the next world. Okay? So, what are the four cups of the night? First one is Kaddish, Kiddush. Okay? Second cup is? Anyone? What? But yeah, right, right. The Maggid, exactly. Maggid, Maggid. Second cup is over the story. I mean, the second cup is you have the second cup poured the entire time that you're telling the Maggid story, and at the end of the story, and a little bit of halal, we drink that second cup, right? Third cup is what? Exactly, over the meal, right? So that's over the suda that we have, and the final cup is. And the rest of the halal, and the song, and the singing, praising that we sing to Hashem, the halal hagadol, the great halal, the big halal. Okay, so how do those four correspond? So, first one is easy, kiddush. You only need to sanctify when you're in a situation which is to start with. Not sanctified. And that's olam hazeh. This world, the way to deal with this world, we're surrounded by profane things. Everything, anywhere we look, it's all profane. It's all non-kaddish. And the job that we have is to be mekaddish them. And what does it mean to be mekaddish? It means to designate, to dedicate, to set aside, and to connect to a higher purpose, a higher source. So before we start whatever the Yom Tov or the Shabbos, we make a kiddush on a cup of wine to declare and to designate this upcoming day, this time, and all the food and everything else that we're going to be having at this meal, right, that it should be designated for Hashem. What? Well, here would be Mekadosh the day. Right, but one can also be mekadosh an object. But by kiddush, we're mekadosh the day. We're declaring the day as being holy. Zachar as Yom Shabbos lekadosho. The Shabbos itself is being sanctified. We're doing it over a cup of wine. It's a kosher bracha, but yeah, we're not. Very important thing to point. Please do not think we are not. Do not, under any circumstances, declare the wine that you have in your kiddush cup to be holy wine, and then drink it. Okay, that would be a very, very big problem, right? You're not allowed to consume kachim, right? So if you do designate wine to the altar, then you cannot drink that anymore. Okay, so we're being mekadosh the day, not the wine. We're using the wine to enhance it. Okay. So the kiddush represents olam hazeh. That's the first stage, which olam hazeh needs to be made holy, set aside for holy purposes. Next is the story of Maggid. Now Maggid was a story of Maggid. It's a long, or maybe not so long, maybe a very short version of what we've been working on for quite some time now, called.
Redemption.
The coming of Mashiach, exactly. It's right now, right? So, difficulties, hardships, and then Hashem sends someone who, you know, saves the Jewish people, takes us out. That's Maggid. That's what we've been looking for. That's what we're looking for every day. That's Hashem very soon. I was just told today, this morning, that all the Muslim YouTubers are saying that the Israelis are getting ready to demolish the Al-Aqsa Mosque Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So, let's hope that they're right.
You heard it here first, yeah.
Listen, all the Muslim YouTubers are saying it. It's got to be true.
Is that the way it's supposed to come about? Is it for, through our own actions? Or is it supposed to be like, kind of...
We'll see. However it happens, we'll be happy. Okay, so so Maggid is represents the coming of Mashiach. And then we have the benching they do the over the meal, Birkas HaMazon. Now the Chazal say that La'asik Lavo, with the Tchias HaMeisim, Hashem is going to make a suda for the tzaddikim, a feast for the righteous. And that suda is going to be a lot of really special people, right? The suda is Olav Yosson, right? And the shorter bor also, right? So in addition to the Leviathan, is also going to be the wild giant ox. Yeah, whatever that means. Mythical creatures. But anyway, so those are going to be served at the meal. It's going to be Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, as well as David HaMelech. And that's where Midrash says, David HaMelech says, close...
this is a reference to that meal. So we're saying Barish is Kiyasamesh.
So the Birkas Hamazon, yeah. What's the pleasure? Because Yeshua himself, Hashem Hashem Akra, raise up the cup of salvation and call out in Hashem's name. That's the David HaMelech is going to be leading that Birkas Hamazon. So whoever's going to be leading that Birkas Hamazon, just let them know, you know, which hat to wear at the time. Okay, so that represents Tchias HaMeisim, that Suda, that's Suda Salav Yosson. And then finally, we make it into a situation where you're not allowed to eat. Ein bo lo achila ve lo shtia. Once you bench, you can't eat, you can't drink. Right? That's the halacha. Just like Olam Habo, Ein bo lo achila ve lo shtia. El tzadikim yoshin, vatrusein beroshein, venenim ezvershin. Just tzadikim sit there with their crowns on their heads, basking in their radiance of the divine presence. And that's the Hallel Gadol, just singing our hearts out to our Creator. That's Olam Haba. That's all there is to do in Olam Haba. Yeah. Now notice something. What? Yeah, that coast is the one thing you can have. Now between those two cups, you cannot interrupt. And not only that, but the four cups are really learned from the languages of Hotseisi, Hitzalti, and Goalti. The Goan says that those two last cups are both learned from the language of Goalti. I know it's not like the Yerushalmi that everyone knows, but that's what the Goan says. It says the Tosofer. The Goan says it's the Tosofer, Yerushalmi. Not like everybody. Okay. But nothing. He says if you can start counting Lakati, you have to count also Hevesi and many other Lashonos that are used over there. So anyway, but the two cups are learned both from Goalti, and that's because really Tchias HaMeisim, Olam Habo, are pretty much, I mean, they're so tightly woven together that you have to really be an expert in these inyanim to even know the difference. Often, you know, Lashit Lavo, sometimes it talks about the time after Tchias HaMeisim, sometimes it's talking about Olam Habo. It's a very nuanced distinction. It's already, you're pretty much there. Like, yeah, and not only are you pretty much there, but there's no interruptions anymore. In other words, in this world, right? So we have, you do kiddush again. It's nice. It doesn't mean the Mashiach is coming, right? So there's certainly interruptions that could be made. Even when Mashiach comes, it doesn't immediately bring Tchias HaMeisim. There could be other stuff happening in between. But once Tchias HaMeisim happens, then it's already an automatic. Then you go. After that, you go to Olam Habo. So that's why there's no inter. As Gemara says explicitly, maybe even the Mishnah says explicitly, between those two cups there's no interrupting. You can't have anything in between. How awesome was that? Okay. Okay. So now we come to, what do? We do Kaddish. Now what do we do, Mordi? It's a Kaddish. Urchatz, very good. He doesn't know the song after all these years. Because the kids sing the song. Okay, so which is, what does Urchatz mean? Right, we wash our hands without a bracha. Very good. Right. So the washing of the hands is for tahara. Right, you wash your hands to purify your hands. So tahara, a beautiful thing, is that tahara comes after kedusha. We just did kaddish, that's kedusha, and then and then you move over to Tahara, right? If you look in the Shas over here, so Kadshim is followed by Taharos, right? You look in the Mishnayos over here, right? So you got Kadshim followed by Taharos, right? So it's an order of progression. Once you know how to take things in this world and designate them for Hashem, then you yourself can be a Tahor person, a person clean and pure of involvement and soiling yourself in things of this world. So now, so we're able to wash our hands. Okay. Karpas. Now, Karpas, hopefully someone at the table will ask you, Karpas, why are we having vegetables now? Usually, what do you do usually on a regular Leil Yom Tov, Leil Shabbos? When do the salads come out? After the Hamotzi, right? You first make the Hamotzi and then the salads come out. And here you bring out the salad. Karpas is a salad, some sort of vegetable. It can be whatever vegetable you want, I don't care. But it's a salad. Yeah? It comes prematurely. So someone will ask you, why is it coming prematurely? And that's in fact why we do it, to make a shinui, to make a difference in the night, so that the children will ask questions. The question is, what are you going to tell them when they ask the question?
Well, it's to be paying attention. Great.
So the Ramchal, the Leshem also, they say that the entire process of Leil Seder, of this night, is unlike any other holiday. Usually the way things work is we ascend in a stepwise progression, like going up a ladder, is spiritually ascend through a holiday or through a Shabbos or whatever it may be, in a way of being prepared and ready to take the next small step upwards. But the problem is that the Jewish people were on a very low level in Mitzrayim. So if Hashem is going to start introducing bit by bit higher and higher levels, then there would be, people could start rationalizing, justifying, explaining things away, and not be able to break out of that slave mentality, of that headspace that we were in. So rather, what Hashem did is he just literally like stuck his hand into the crucible and just pulled us out all at once. So all the spiritual levels come in with basachas, all at once, without the usual step-by-step ascent. That's why we break the order also of the Seder. That's why, in fact, the night is called Leil HaSeder, right? Because it's so unique in the shinuyim, the out of order. You bring out the matzah, you take it away. It's all just to show Hashem's in charge. He wants to bring out the salad first, you can bring out the salad. We're going to bring out the bread, then we're going to take away the bread before you have a chance to eat it. We're going to go hide the bread. It's so that's like a shidud marochas. It's a, how do I translate shidud marochas? A disarray of heavenly channels of spiritual flow. A marocha is an organization or a organization. So Shiv Marachas means the disarray of heavenly organization. In other words, instead of having to first be fit to a certain level, and then you get a little bit of spirituality, and then when you live up to that, then you get a little bit more, and we go up like a ladder. Instead, Hashem just says, I'm in charge, I'm doing whatever I want, I'm going to throw this one and then that one, and therefore it's completely overwhelming us, and more importantly, completely overwhelming the Yetzirah. That's what's happening on the Leil Seder for sure, and therefore that could be an answer to why we bring out the vegetables out of order.
Explain that a little bit better for me. It's Seder, but it's like not Seder. So we call it the Seder, but it's really the anti-Seder.
It's Hashem Seder. He's organized. He's running things. He's organizing things.
And so this is deliberately out of order to show us that that's how this is going to work today.
Yeah.
Setting the tone for that.
That's why you say Manishtan Alazeh. Why is this night different? Usually there's certain things happen in certain ways. This night, everything is different about this night. Yeah.
I'm curious if there's an analogy. Can I make that same analogy for a Baal Teshuvah? Is there a kind of a recommended way for someone with a Baal Teshuvah go in all at once, like completely in, immerse themselves, or do it step by step the same way you mentioned like this?
Wow, Alan, that was a great observation. I'll just repeat it so that everybody can hear it on the recording. I want to know if maybe there's some sort of an illusion that when a person is trying to break out of a secular mentality, a person who grew up secular, and in other words, a tinuk shenishba, a Jewish child that's been kidnapped, that's literally living amongst goyim, and to break out, is there, should he be going up in a stepwise progression, right, which is the usual recommended way of growth? That's how people should usually grow, in a stepwise progression. Or should there be a Shiv Marachas? The truth is that Rav Tzadok HaKohen says it's one of the first pieces he has in Tzidkas HaTzadik. He says that is a unique thing that we see that there's a difference between the Leila Seder in Mitzrayim and the Leil HaSeder L'Doros, that first year we ate b'chipozon, we ate very quickly, and we ate with our shoes on our feet and our walking staffs in our hands, right? And we left b'chipozon, we left in a tremendous hurry, which the Gemara said explicitly is not meant to be repeated in the future, because that was a one-time thing. So Rav Tzadok explains that the very first time that you need to break away from the gravitational pull, right? In other words, if you want to launch a rocket ship into outer space, right? So in the beginning, you need an explosion. Because the Earth's gravitational pull is so strong and the atmosphere is so thick, it's like trying to push a pencil through like a maple syrup, through like an entire layer of maple syrup, right? So you need to explode, you need to just go crazy and expand like, what is it, like 60% of all of your fuel on those first few percentages of the flight, right? To break out of the Earth's gravitational pull. Once you do that, then you can already, you know, go in a more conservative way, try to conserve your fuel, you gotta go all the way to Mars, right? That's the place to go nowadays, that's the destination. Everyone's trying to get to Mars. I'm staying right here on Earth, but whoever is going to Mars, right, I wish you good luck. But the point is, so too, in Mitzrayim, we had to break out of that gravitational pull. A Baal Teshuvah, that for that first time, in the beginning, you need an explosive burst of movement, which you see sometimes people who are involved in cure organizations, and they just kind of like keep like treading water. They just keep like having one foot in and one foot out, and they never, even though they keep learning and they keep doing, but they never make any progress. And the reason is because they never make enough of a push to actually break out of the gravitational pull. So that is what happened on that night. Now, for us, there's still going to be, now that we're no longer there, so we are going to have a process, etc., but we do want to make some of these changes in the Seder night in order to allude to that. There is a couple, maybe we can say a couple more Ramazim in the Karpas. First of all, Karpas itself, the Sfarim Kedoshim say, Karpas is the same letters as Perach Samach. Perach, like Avodas Perach, crushing labor. And Samach is 60, numerical value 60, the Shishim Ribua, the 60, 10,000, means 600,000 Jewish males and their families that were being crushed with the labor in Mitzrayim. That's the Avodas Perach. And there's an interesting dynamic. We do dip the Karpas. Right? So now, dipping is their Cherus. When a person just has to get his food down in order to, you know, have energy to go, right? They're not dipping their food into anything. Now, before I talk about dipping food, we're not used to talking about dipping food. When's the last time you dipped your food into anything?
I mean, like the chips,
even. I don't know if that counts. So it does. Right? Very good. So dipping things into ketchup or into mustard or to any sauce, right? If you think about that, then we actually dip a lot of things, right? Like every time you put out a vegetable platter, what do you put in the center of it? Some ranch dressing or hummus or something else to dip the veggies into, right? And the truth is, even when we're not actually physically dipping, you know why we're not dipping? Because we're just putting the sauce inside. Whether it be a sandwich, right? What sandwich doesn't have some ketchup, some mustard, you know, whatever is in there, right? Hot dog, hamburger. If you're getting a steak, you're probably gonna get some sauce to dip it into, right? If you're eating potatoes, mashed potatoes, you're probably gonna have some gravy on there, right? So in other words, we're all the time, they used to eat with their hands. So they had finger food that would be dipped into a little bowl of liquid. But now that we eat with knives and forks, so we tend to just pour it on and just kind of cut off a piece and dip it into the sauce. But we're all the time dipping things. Why? Because we eat for pleasure. We eat as Bnei Chorin, right? We eat in a hush of a way. The place that we see it in the Torah is that when Kohanim eat Kodshim, sacrifices in the temple, so then there's a drasha that they should eat it with some mustard, with some dip, that they should be eaten in a way of the way the kings eat, and not the way that someone eats just to get the nutrition in. Right? If you're eating just for nutrition, there's no need for any dips. Dips are not providing the nutrition. Chew through that dry sandwich, gulp it down with some water, and you're done. Right? So the fact that we dip the Karpas means that already there's a certain level of being Bnei Chorin. Is that just to finish this one point? What is the freedom? What is the Bnei Chorin? Because you have to remember already by the very beginning of the night, we've already rid our houses of chametz, and we already shechted the Korban Pesach. We already slaughtered the Korban Pesach, which was the Egyptian god. That was the Avodah Zarah. So we removed from ourselves the Seor Shebi'isa, the sourdough bread, which represents the Yetzirah that lives inside of man, and we slaughtered their god, which represents the Shibud Malchius, the enslavement, that the oppression that comes on us from the outside, from the Egyptians, from the enslaving power that's upon us. So both of those we've already broken. So we do already have a level of chayrus, so we'll dip it, but we do not recline because we haven't yet said magid. We haven't yet gone through the story. We haven't yet seen the salvation, so we're not yet reclining, but we can already dip.
So you mentioned that Kohans, specifically Kohans, are allowed to kind of not go beyond mere satisfying their the basic bodily needs and can enjoy their food. The rest of the Jewish people cannot do that, or
No. So Al's asking that with the Kohanim, we see there's a mitzvah to when they eat the sacrificial meat that they need to do it in a way of enjoyment. What about the rest of us? It's a good question. The truth is, we will actually get to it when we talk about Halach Ma'anya coming up with the matzah. But I'll just say this. Certainly, if you're eating on Shabbos or you're eating on Yom Tov, for sure you should be enjoying it as a part of sanctifying that meal. In other words, this meal is not being eaten to satisfy your bodily needs. This meal is being eaten to appreciate the kindnesses and the goodness of Hashem. Now, what about on a regular weekday? So I'll just share a funny story that I know Rav Gershenfeld is fond of saying, so I'll say it over. He was a young man, and he had a chavrusa with Rav Aaron Feldman, back when Rav Aaron Feldman was still living in Eretz Yisrael, before he became Rosh Hashiva of Ner Yisrael. So he came to his house, and apparently either he hadn't eaten or whatever, the Rebbetzin offered him to eat, so he's okay, great, so he's going to be eating. And she had made hamburgers. Okay, great. So Rav Gershenfeld asked if he could have some ketchup. So Rav Aaron Feldman heard that, he's like, what? Ketchup? Type of food? You eat type of food? You have all nutrition right there. You have the bread, you have the meat. What do you need the ketchup for? It's not Shabbos, it's not Yom Tov. So, okay, now Rav Aaron Feldman was on a very high level. It's okay, you want to have some ketchup? Good, just, maybe cut back on the brownies afterwards. One brownie, not three brownies. We're good shape. All right? Fine, so that gets us to Yachatz. So we are going to be now breaking the matzah. Why are we going to be breaking the matzah? So we declare Ha Lachma Anya. This is bread of poverty. This is the bread of poverty. So if you want to call, if you want to declare it being the bread of poverty, you know what you first have to do? You have to make it bread of poverty. By breaking off a piece from it, we make it bread of poverty. First of all, the very simple level. How is it a bread of poverty? Anybody? That's right. Very good. So the Gemara says that an ani, a poor man, eats a broken piece of bread, right? Fancy man, he goes to the bakery, buys himself a bun, right? And eats the whole thing. A poor man is eating scraps, right? Because why? Because at some point he had a whole roll, but he had to eat some of that. He's still conserving, still saving a little piece, right? So he's got this he's got a partially eaten, partially not eaten thing. That's going to be his food. So that's the way of an ani, is to eat a partial piece of bread. Now, the Gaon explains that the truth is that this goes much, much deeper than that. The matzah exists in two states. It exists in a state of shlemus, or exist in a state of lack, which actually helps to explain a very big difficulty that we have amongst the Mefarshim. I told you guys earlier at the beginning, the matzah represents gula, salvation, and it's undeniable. The pasuk says, you eat matzah, why? Because you left Egypt in a hurry. It says that clearly. However, in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, right in the beginning, we say it's halach ma'anya. This is the bread of poverty, di achlu of hasana ba'ara de Mitzrayim, that our forefathers ate in Egypt. So that sounds bad, that sounds negative. And even if you say that it was the bread that we ate in Egypt, meaning on that night, right before we left, we did eat matzah that night before we left, but still, why the association to Egypt? Why all the lachma anya bread of... The Pasuk itself says, lechem oni. The Pasuk describes it as being lechem oni. And from that we learn, there should be a prusa, there should be broken bread, that Omrim alav dvarim harbe, that we say over it many things, just like a poor man, he doesn't have a lot to eat, so he has a lot to say at his table, he talks a lot, cries over his woes. Rich people, they eat the whole time. The poor people, they cry over their woes, etc. Okay, we just ran out of time, so we will pick up Bezer Shem next week with the breaking of the bread with Ha Lachma Anya.